In his new book, Gruesome Spectacles, Botched Executions and America's Death Penalty, legal scholar Austin Sarrett describes just how unquiet death by execution can be. If we assume a death row prisoner is guilty, how can we be sure that we are fulfilling the Supreme Court's mandate to ensure that his execution is, quote, the mere extinguishment of life and not a cruel and unusual punishment? Gruesome Spectacles is a history of botched, mismanaged, and painful executions in the United States from 1890 to 2010. We welcome Austin Sarrett to the program. William Nelson Cromwell, Professor of Jurisprudence and Political Science at Amherst College in Amherst, Massachusetts. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Austin Sarrett back to the roundtable.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you on the program. How did you come to this subject, especially going back as far back as you went to 1890?
Well, I've been studying capital punishment in the United States really since the beginning of the 1990s. I came to the subject of capital punishment in part because in the early 1990s, I thought that the debates about capital punishment would provide an interesting lens, or if you will, a window through which many of the important political, cultural, and social debates happening at the time could be seen, if you will, in microcosm. I've stayed with the subject of capital punishment because since the 1990s, the situation of capital punishment in the United States has changed dramatically. I think today we're in a period of national reconsideration of the death penalty. What mostly has driven that national reconsideration, this period of rethinking capital punishment, has been a concern about the fate of the innocent and the risk of executing the innocent. I was interested in adding something to that set of concerns. Namely, I was interested in trying to think again about the fate of the guilty. And botched executions, looking at what happens when executions go wrong, I thought would provide a handle on what happens to those who at the end of the day we put to death. And that's really why I came to the subject.
As I mentioned in the introduction, you have a date on here of looking at executions from 1890 to 2010. Before we get into the details of some of the reasons and what has happened, we certainly should mention that just within the last year, we have seen several cases, high-profile cases, of botched executions.
Well, that's right, and I think that botched executions have been a little bit of the hidden part of the iceberg in the America's story of capital punishment. As my book shows, about 3% of all American executions over the period of 1890 to 2010 were botched in some way. What's happened most recently is that our faith in the latest technology of execution, lethal injection, has to some extent been put to the test, as we've seen these mishaps and these real problems in the latest technology of execution.
Give us a sense of how these stories have been obscured, in the sense of lately it has been a story, and as you talk about it being the tip of the iceberg. So how did we come to this point where it has been obscured and people have not noticed that 3%?
Well, I would say the following. First of all, certainly in the contemporary period, executions are not supposed to make headlines. We're supposed to be in a period in which execution becomes somewhat routinized, becomes almost a bureaucratic transaction. So when executions do make headlines, that is in of itself something quite remarkable. If you look at the treatment of botched executions both in law and in the popular press over the course of the 20th century, when they happened, they were written off as mere accidents, as misfortunes, as telling us nothing at all of significance about the death penalty system itself. So newspapers would cover a botched execution and attribute it to, you know, a hangman who was drunk, or an electrode that wasn't tightened as it should have been. Today, I think the story of botched executions fits a larger narrative about what's happening in the death penalty system as a whole, and I think that larger narrative makes botched executions all the more significant in the public consciousness.
In the book, you address hanging and electrocution and the gas chamber and lethal injection. It seems as though it's safe to say, in reading this book, that we haven't found a way, at least looking at the Supreme Court of their definition of execution, we haven't found a fail-safe way of doing it.
I think that's right. I think there is no fail-safe or foolproof method of putting someone to death. If we look at each of the technologies of execution that we've used, they've each had their characteristic problems. With hanging, if you didn't get it right, someone would strangle, or in some rare cases, they could be decapitated. With electrocution, if you didn't get it right, inmates could, in fact, did catch on fire. With the gas chamber, if you didn't get it right, the asphyxiation would be excruciatingly slow. And with botched lethal injections, problems of finding a vein, problems of getting the drugs right. So I think there is and really can be no foolproof method of execution. I think really the question is, what is our tolerance for error? Is 3% an acceptable error rate in the business of capital punishment?
Let's talk a little bit about lethal injection, because it is the one certainly in the news the most recently. The question being, why did we come, or how did we come to lethal injection as a method? And was the idea to make it more humane? And at what point did we start to lose in this idea of finding the right drugs and the physiology of it, of being able to administer it to a human being?
Well, Joe, the story of capital punishment in the 20th century has been a story of movement from one technology to the next, always with the hope that the new technology would be safe, reliable, and humane, and an improvement on the prior one. So the story of lethal injection is to some extent the story of the failure of electrocution. So in the middle of the 20th century and into the 1970s, a series of very well-publicized botched electrocutions happened. Several of them were concentrated in Florida. These were truly gruesome events in which inmates caught on fire. And in a way, the failure of electrocution is what propelled the search for this new technology called lethal injection. Ideas, proposals to use lethal injection or something like it have been around for a very, very long period of time. But the momentum to actually adopt it and use it came out of the failures of electrocution. Lethal injection was first adopted as a legal method of execution in Oklahoma in 1977. A couple of Oklahoma state legislators proposed it as an alternative method of execution. They consulted with the state's medical examiner and also with the head of the Oklahoma Medical School's anesthesiology department. And the latter suggested the specific drugs that would be used and really became the basis for the three-drug protocol, which until very recently has been the standard method of using or doing lethal injection. Recently, because of the reluctance of European drug manufacturers to send drugs to the United States that would be used for execution, the various states have had to scurry and try different methods, different drug combinations, and to find different drug suppliers. And that's made what was already a difficult process all the more difficult. We're in a period in really in which states are now engaged in a kind of experimentation with human beings to try to figure out what combinations of drugs and what dosages will actually work.
Why is that so difficult when it comes to the drugs? I know when we have a discussion about this on the radio and people call up, they say, look, you can put down, we can call the vet and they can put down a cow. They can put down a moose. Why can't they put down a human being in a humane way?
Well, I think that we need to talk about the death penalty we have, not the death penalty that we hope we have. We need to talk about the death penalty as it is, not the death penalty in some kind of hypothetical world. And there are a couple of things in play here. First of all, finding and adopting and using a method of execution is not an ideal philosophical question. It's a political question. Interests come into play. People who might be called entrepreneurs argue for particular methods and argue for particular things, and state legislatures are moved by those arguments. It turns out that putting a human being to death is not an easy thing to do because, you know, human beings are not going to be as cooperative as we might hope they would be when they're being put to death. And with respect to lethal injection, as you know, the American Medical Association and has forbidden doctors from playing an active role. So you have untrained people trying to administer the drugs. Unlike an anesthesiologist in a hospital who carefully calculates the dosage of a drug for you by taking into account your height, your weight, your strength of your heart, and all other aspects of your physiology, and then decides exactly how much of that drug they're going to give you, in lethal injection, that's not the way it's done. State protocols prescribe a standard dosage, and that dosage is used regardless of the physiology of the condemned. So perhaps in some ideal world, we could imagine executions which were painless and flawless, but in the world in which we live, we're very far from that.
Austin Sarrett is our guest. His book, Gruesome Spectacles, Botched Executions, and America's Death Penalty. You end the book with a discussion and a chapter on botched executions and the struggle to end capital punishment. Do you think that's where we're headed, ending capital punishment?
Well, as I said earlier, Joe, I think we're in a period of national reconsideration of capital punishment. If you look closely at the facts, it looks like the death penalty is in decline. So about 15 years ago, we were sentencing to death about 300 people a year. That number has been cut by more than two-thirds. If you go back to, again, about 15 years ago, we executed 98 people. That was the high point in recent history. That number has been cut by more than half. We have 18 states that have abolished the death penalty. We have 32 states in the federal government that have it. If you look at those 32 states, eight of those states haven't executed anyone in more than a decade. If you look at the year 2013, only 15 of the 32 states that have a death penalty actually sentenced someone to death. So it looks like the death penalty is in trouble. And I mentioned earlier the way in which botched executions now fit into a kind of story about capital punishment. What is that story? That story is that we understand that there's a high risk of executing the innocent. We understand that factors like race or geography play a role in making the choice of who gets a death sentence seem arbitrary or discriminatory. We know that the period after someone is sentenced to death until they are actually executed can be an excruciatingly long one in which states do not provide adequate resources for the appeals that are necessary. And we now see quite vividly that even when we get people into the death chamber, the machine, this kind of bureaucratic machine, looks rather unreliable. So whereas botched executions used to be written off, I think today they are part of a story in which Americans are looking at capital punishment and don't like what they see. Americans are looking at capital punishment and thinking about the damage that capital punishment does to American values, the values of fairness and equal treatment, and not imposing cruel punishment. So I do think the death penalty is in trouble. When and where and how the death penalty will be gone from the United States, well, that's a kind of prediction which I don't think any of us can make at this point.
You speak of a reconsideration, and one of the things that strikes me is when we have a botched execution, we hear from people who are in support of capital punishment say that, well, here is a person who is being put to death because of a heinous crime, and if they suffered a little bit, then it certainly is no more than that person or persons that they have killed and the family of those people they have killed, that the suffering that they have felt. How do you counter such an argument, and is such an argument valid?
Well, I certainly understand the extraordinary suffering that comes with the loss of a loved one to a horrible crime. There is no gainsaying it. It is truly beyond imagination. At the same time, for as long as we've been a country, from the beginning of the Republic, we've been committed to the idea that we would not execute, we would not punish in a cruel way. That means that when we punish, we're committed to being better than those that we punish. And when we execute, we're committed to being better than those that we execute. No matter how tempting it is, and no matter how understandable it is to want to see the person punished or the person executed to suffer and to experience a small taste of the pain that person has inflicted, our Constitution commits us not to give in to that temptation. So I understand what it is that the survivors of murder victims may say. Our Constitution puts us to a very high test in terms of the way in which we respond to the most gruesome crimes.
You struck me a moment ago when you said that one of the things we have to come to terms with, and in this reconsideration, is if 3% is an okay percentage. And it seems to me that the answer to that should be no. But statistically, is that an outrageous percentage?
Well, if I told you that 3% of the flights out of the airport in Albany or in Hartford or New York City were going to have problems, you might say, I'm not sure I want to get on an airplane.
Right.
And by the way, with respect to lethal injection itself, lethal injection has the highest rate of mishap, the highest rate of being botched of any of our technologies. 7% of all lethal injections were botched, and that was just through 2010. That didn't include the most recent period. The United States Supreme Court has said, though not about botched executions in particular, that death is different. It requires heightened standards of reliability and heightened standards of certainty when we put someone to death. And that may very well be that same standard ought to be applied to executions. We're committed to the idea that when we execute, we should impose no more pain than is necessary to get someone from life to death. And botched executions are an indication that we're not doing that. We're not doing that particularly well. I think ultimately, when we think about punishment in general or execution in particular, punishment is as much about who we are and who we want to be, as it is about what we do to those that have violated our laws. And I hope that by providing a historical overview of botched executions, by looking at the rate at which executions are botched. And Joe, again, in the book, as you know, we tell the stories of the crime as well as we tell the story of the execution.
Mm.
So it's an effort to provide a balanced picture. But I hope that by providing the data, the information on the rate at which executions are botched, well, then Americans can ask themselves, is 3% overall or 7% for lethal injection, is that acceptable?
You also, it seems in the book, take the media to task for their involvement in creating the perception that many Americans have about capital punishment.
Well, in particular, what we focus on is the way in which newspapers over the period of the 20th century covered botched executions. And the way in which newspapers covered them, they didn't do what I think is an adequate job in connecting the fact of botched executions to the commitments that we as a society, both legally and constitutionally, have. As I said earlier, they tended to write them off as mere mishaps. Of course, the media, you know, focuses on the events of the day. So you might get a story of a botched execution, and it was a story of that botched execution rather than setting it in this broader context, which my book hopefully does. So I think to some extent, Americans haven't had a very accurate picture of the world of botched executions. I hope that the book helps to provide such a picture.
The name of the book is Gruesome Spectacles, Botched Executions and America's Death Penalty. It is published by Stanford Law Books. Austin Sarrett, thank you very much for joining us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Gruesome Spectacles, Botched Executions and America's Death Penalty. The book is published by Stanford Law Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.